services and women's wellness. If you have conversations, please take them out in the hall. Could you please turn off your cell phones? That means not just put them on mute, but turn them completely off, as well as your blueberries and your blackberries. And raspberries. Okay, we are going to open up the first public hearing on House Bill 3016. And we have a list of people. Let's see, we have two representatives to speak. Thank you for coming. Busy, busy day today. And I think you have a dash 3 amendment, which is the first that I have seen, and maybe many on the committee. By the way, I just want to let folks know that legislators will be coming and going, because this really is probably the last day that many people can promote their own bills, and so they're in other committees testifying. So if you see people coming and going, it's not because they're not interested in these bills, it's that they're testifying in other committees. Everybody is very interested in all the bills we will be hearing today. So thank you all for coming. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummel, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston and Bull Mountain. In 1999, I worked with Representative Jane Loken to create House Bill 3446. And what this legislation was to do was to direct that the Damish mental hospital in Wilsonville and all of the grounds around it, which included about 270 acres, would be sold for development of an urban village. That is now being developed, and it's called Belvoir, and you've probably seen the signs along I-5 and that sort of thing. The purpose of the legislation was that after the sale, that the proceeds of the sale of Damish would go to the Mental Health Division for the purposes specifically of creating housing for the chronically mentally ill. Since Damish was closed in 1995, the notion was that there should be community housing for mentally ill folks. And so, and then also as part of that, 10 acres of the 270 acres would be set aside. It did not have to be contiguous. I always thought that it was 10 buildable acres, but anyway, that's a minor detail, that would be used for actual housing projects. And it would be paid for from the proceeds and from the interest off of the account that was created. Over the course of the last few years, the division has steadily tried to sort of redirect some of those dollars into other purposes. And that is why you have House Bill 3016 before you today. We, myself, as well as Representative Flores, former Representative Loken, and other people specifically in the Clackamas County NAMI group, are concerned that these dollars are being redirected in a way that is not in the intent of the original legislation, that it is not that it is not creating housing, which is badly needed for chronically mentally ill, and that and there's been even some talk that the acreage that they have at the what's now the Villebois site would be sold off, and those proceeds then used for other purposes such as rent subsidies and other purposes, and including services for drug addicted folks and that sort of thing. This legislation had a very clear intent, and it has been muddied over the last few years. House Bill 3016, the dash 3 amendments, is a rewrite of the original bill, as you see, and it the notion behind it is to be very clear, to set up a board that would then administer how these funds are utilized for the benefit of the chronically mentally ill. And that, I think, is a real crux of it. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I could go on and on about this project.
I've been
involved with it for a long time, but I really want you to be able to hear from Representative Flores and from the other folks that are in the audience that are interested in this bill, specifically Jane Loken, Doris Menard, and Richard Riley. They have worked tirelessly tirelessly on this. But I would be also happy to answer any questions, and I will also be glad to stand by once I stand down to answer any questions that may come up.
Thank you so much, Representative. I would hope that one of you would talk about how the Dash 2 is different from the Dash 3, since I think probably most of us have not seen the Dash 3 and 3 until today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Linda Flores, members of the committee. I'm State Representative from House District 51, which is Clackamas, Damascus, Boring, Estacada, and other parts. I am privileged to be here today and support this bill with Representative Crummell, who, along with then-Representative Jane Loken, helped work to bring the damaged bill to fruition in 1999. Along with former Representative Loken, Richard Riley, Doris Menard, and other members from National Alliance of Mentally Ill, Clackamas County, this bill comes forward. The Dash 2s and Dash 3s are the result of the original bill not having quite met the standard that was the result of some discussions with Legislative Council. We have all experienced that in various iterations. And I think the best ones to address the distinctions, and I think that the Dash 3s are probably the overriding and superseding document, would be Jane Loken, Richard Riley, and Doris Menard. And I do apologize, Madam Chair. I thought you had been delivered a copy of the Dash 3s yesterday. I am here just to affirm that working with my friends over past number of, well, moves into years now, is their concern has always been that the original intent of the original bill would be preserved and protected. Their work with the state agency has caused some concern that, as often happens when there's either a pot of money or a potential pot of money, it's always got a little bit of a target on it. And then the definition of chronically mentally ill was attempted to be modified, and that caused these activists in the field of mental illness some very significant concern. So I am just here to beg your indulgence to hear the argument, hear the rationale, and hear the opportunity to provide and protect this bill as it was originally intended in that particular area. And I would also like to say for the record, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that the agency and the department has never come to me since this bill did come out to say, you know, we have some concerns about this original printed bill. Can we talk about this? So that I could introduce them to the amendments as they were evolving in the discussions that led us here. And I'm very concerned about that. And I'm very concerned about the fact that I know that most of you have been contacted to say that bill should die. That is not the case. This deserves your very serious consideration today. And I thank you for this opportunity. And I will not allow Representative Crummell the opportunity to close and say, not at this time.
Thank you so very much, Representative. Any quick questions of our two legislators? Thank you so much for taking your time to
Thank
come
you.
Today and working on this bill. I'm going to call on Jane Loken, who had been my representative. Welcome today to the Capitol, Representative Loken, and Richard Riley. And Jane, maybe you could talk about how the Dash 2 is different from the Dash 3. That would be very helpful.
Yes, that is a very simple thing. If you look, I believe it's, well, I'm not sure which you're looking at right now and with the change.
We have, at least in front of me, I have both, so.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we have only
the original.
Pardon? We have only Dash 3.
Oh, you don't have the Dash 2?
No.
Okay, well, then you don't have to worry
I can
about
tell
it.
You
for me, I had gone through the Dash 2, and I just want to know the differences. Well, go ahead, Jane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a simple change in the bill. Dash 2, we're talking now about the bill about property, the damaged 10 acres. It said up to 10 acres. And the new bill says 10 acres. It just makes it specific, 10 acres.
Okay.
That's the only, so if you just remove those preceding words,
great.
You will have the Dash 3 amendment.
Okay. Hello, Richard. Thank you for coming.
Good morning. Representative Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Richard Riley. I'm here today representing NAMI, Oregon, who are proposing the dash three amendments. Now, I just like you, I just handed a handout, a piece of which I'm going to use that reads dash two, because I'm as late to the 2-3 separation, I guess, as you are. I can go two ways with this. I can talk in general about what the bill is trying to do and why it's doing this, our amendments, or I can talk specifically line by line about what the amendments do, and it's to your pleasure. I mean, I'm prepared to go either way.
What does the committee need? I've gone through this pretty thoroughly myself. Does anybody need a thorough looking at this, or can we just, okay, I'm hearing no. So, Richard, give us the short version.
Give us the overview. Okay. I became involved with this late. It really started in 1997, and I didn't get involved until 1999. There's been a lot of conversation about people from Clackamas County. I'm not. I'm a former president of NAMI Multnomah County, and currently am a member of NAMI Lincoln County. So I'm not from Clackamas County. I'm from an outsider. And this bill was always intended, particularly the trust account, to provide housing throughout the state. And of the hundreds of acres of stuff that's being built, only one so far has been built in Villebois. And I want to make that very clear, because there's this confusion about this continues. Okay. Our dash three eliminates the bureaucracy and the costs written into the original bill. The provision to remove most of page one and all of page 2-10 eliminates the bureaucracy and all the associated costs that appeared in the first bill. So there's no longer any of that. The bill would now require no new revenue and or new personnel. It keeps its goal, which is to remove the trust from the fund. Now, NAMI Oregon believes that the Mental Health Housing Fund is a very important tool for the division. However, it is necessarily liberal in its approach. It's designed to merge and match various objectives to meet the end. HB 3446 is a minute little pot, although it seems to be the pot everybody wants. And therefore, it sets inside the fund. My diagram. Everybody's teasing me about this. The fund currently, the trust, which is the money that was set aside, and only the interest can be used to build housing throughout the state, is housed inside the fund. The only way the interest gets out is to go through the fund. When it leaves the trust and goes to the fund, by statute, it's now permissible to use that money in the way that they would any other resources in the fund, to mix and match, to aim partially at persons with mental illness rather than solely. And I could list at least two projects already that have been approved by the division that miss completely the solely for persons with mental illness. But that's the purpose of the fund, and we want to keep the fund. What we want to do instead is to remove the trust account from the fund so that the interest earned on the trust is spent solely for the purpose of housing for people with chronic mental illness, not veterans who are homeless, not artists who need a place to live. These are two people that they have wrapped in with the housing for persons with mental illness as a function of the fund with trust money. Again, if we move it out, like we're talking about, it ends up being restricted solely for the use of persons with chronic mental illness. It leaves the housing fund, this bill leaves the housing fund completely untouched, and it keeps the support functions for the trust with the Addictions and Mental Health Division. We have no desire to upset the operating standards for the fund, and we see no reason to take the trust away from the division either. We think this is important. In 1997, the legislature intended that the proceeds would not be used for paying rent subsidies or plant operation costs. The division is under heavy pressure from developers to supplement the resources, particularly at Damish. And while that is a good idea, this bill restricts that. It does not allow the sale of the Damish property so that it can be converted to rent subsidies or operating things. Gee, very articulate. Finally, the dash three ends up requiring the division to keep the 10 acres in Villebois and build them out. If they build it out, they'll have places for about 300 people in a community of 7,000. That's about 4% of the community or less. Ironically, when Damish was closed, there on the property, there were about 300 people still housed there. So this turns out, without even using the trust, this could turn out to be a wonderful trade if the intent of the bill is maintained and the housing is built out at Villebois rather than sold for purchase of other property or sold for operating expenses.
Thank you, Richard.
I'm prepared to talk line and item if that's desirable. Okay.
Thank you. Thank
that
you.
That was like that response that was on the debate. Yes. Okay.
Any questions of either of these?
Representative Kotek. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here today. And I did have a chance to read through the dash threes this morning. Can you, how does, what you want to change, here's my issue. Rent subsidies versus building housing. Do you have an issue with the rent subsidy portion? Would you want to use any of the money for rent subsidies? The reason I say that is it costs a lot of money sometimes to build. And I understand people want to build housing, but there's also an advantage of having rent subsidies to go further. I'm just wondering what the position is on that issue.
Well, this is that I believe that rent subsidies are important. I listened to Cascadia talk about how it would like to build in the Villebois area, but it's just got to have rent subsidies to do so. This is a very finite resource. Mm-hmm. If you convert it to rent subsidies, it's gone. And in this instance, we always intended that it not be used in that way. Why doesn't the division take some money from somewhere else, put it in the fund, and take care of the rent subsidy issue? Everybody's depending on this trust account to do things, even though there are other resources to do that.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer. How much money are we talking about?
There's $12 million. I'm rounding it all off. And at today's market, it throws off about $500,000 to $600,000 a year, which is then allocated out in portions of $100,000 as seed money to developers to get them started, help them get on their way, reduce their overhead, not overhead, what is it, their loan costs, these kinds of things. Did I answer your question?
I'm sorry, $12 million in the account, and then the interest is being...
Yeah, the only thing that can be used is the interest.
And it's $12 million in the account.
In the trust itself. That's correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you both very much. I know how hard you have worked on this through the years, so thank you for all that you've done, and thank you for coming down to Salem today.
Madam Chair, if I may say where I want to recognize you and the members of the committee, and thank you for listening to us on this. HB 3446 came about through a lot of work, and I know that you were very appreciative of that and supportive of it. And we really want to see, as this this fund continue, this trust continue, with the interest going for persons with chronic mental illness. The need is great. And we are able to provide a few houses. For instance, the I think it was the $650,000 or so that came out of the fund first provided housing generated, well, it was generated $8 million, I believe, so that way you can increase the fund and use the interest to expand the beds. And we certainly think this is a way to go. I think there's been some confusion and difficulty in understanding the difference between chronic mental illness and serious mental illness. And when you go to the statutes, it's very clear. I have them right here, but I won't take the time to read to you. But they separate the various types of mental illness, schizophrenia, and all the other disorders that accompany mental illness that is ongoing with you. It's a permanent disability from the drug use and addictions. And so they, in the statute, separate that. Now, I know that is a difficult separation, but that is what we are hoping and insisting, in fact, be carried on through the bill, that it observe the statutes and reserve this money for beds for the chronically mentally ill. I got into this because of a son who is mentally ill, is after many years, is still in a secure facility with schizophrenia. And when in 1999, actually in 97, I started this while I was in the legislature, began to realize if they are going to sell damage, that original hospital built in 61 by Dr. Ferdinand Damisch, a representative, had begun solely for persons with chronic mental illness. And so I thought, well, why not continue the use of that money, that investment, into the future through the trust fund? And that is how HB 3446 started, just a little history there. But just happened, too, that Dr. Damisch was a friend of my parents, so we became, it sort of was a close family thing to me. And I really have seen this march forward. We have no quarrel with the division. We only want to see the fund preserved, and we want to see it used for persons with chronic mental illness. And I have talked with a clinical psychologist on this, and he agrees that the description as it is given in 426-495 of the statutes spells it correctly, but he knows that there is some impairment of judgment for chronically mentally ill, and often they drift into drug use and alcohol use because they're trying to ease some of their discomfort. So that's a little bit of the history that of Hospital 3446, Representative Kremel has already discussed it very thoroughly, and so just bringing you that little sidelight. But thank you again very much, and we look forward to your support.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you, Richard. So next, I will call Harold Combe, Doris Menard. Harold is my constituent, and I've known Harold a long time. Doris was on the governor's mental health task force. It's good to see you again, Doris.
Hi, Harold.
Good morning. Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doris Menard. I am past president of NAMI Oregon and a member of the Villebois Housing Committee. I have for you being passed out a handout which includes data I've taken from documents from the Mental Health Division which demonstrate the need for housing for persons with mental illness. This is an unmet need, and there are thousands of people with severe and chronic mental illness who need this kind of support. Others have spoken to you about the trust, that part of House Bill 3446, but I'm here to speak to you today about the vision of what Villebois is and what it means for those who have mental illness and need a home. I think the vision for this development began in the minds of those who supported the bill, the original bill, and in the developers who caught the vision and wove the housing for persons with mental illness seamlessly into this new development. And certainly it's been in the minds of the committee members who've worked now since I think the year 2000 to work out all of the glitches and plans and changes and lot sizes and net acres that go along with this kind of a huge development. The vision became a reality last summer when the first house was opened, a group home for six people. The housing that will be created at Villebois, at the old Amish Hospital site in Wilsonville, is a seamless development. It's going to look just like any other. The housing for people with mental illness will not be behind a Safeway store where you look out at the dumpster. It will not be at the end of a dead-end street with gravel or potholes where other folks don't see you and aren't bothered. This housing, you cannot tell it from any of the other upscale homes in the Villebois development. It will be dispersed within the community. It's appropriate to the need with many levels for folks who have needing 24-hour supervision, needing someone on staff there, to people who live in apartments, who may have cars, jobs, and are in recovery. And it's going to be connected to the community with transportation, employment opportunities, services, recreation, education provided throughout the community, the city of Wilsonville. For the first time, I think, we have housing that's new. Usually housing for persons with mental illness is infill already into existing communities, or it's renovated housing. And so this is going to be, as someone has said, up to 270 people in an urban population of 7,000, which will add dramatically to the population of Wilsonville, where I live. The land that's owned by the state is really a step up because we have the cost reduced. We already own the land, and that's a big part of any housing development. Housing is so important to the stability of people who are recovering from mental illness. Not like my son, who lived for many years in a bedroom with two other guys, a dark bedroom, by the way, with huge old furniture, and shared a bathroom with five or six other men until just recently. But he lived like that for years in a group home. And so many others do, too. So I want you to catch the vision of what Villebois means to folks who suffer with this disability and who are striving to recover. The need is so great, we should not divest ourselves of this resource, which is really going to help meet the need. And if you look at those bullet points on my handout from the division's own statistics, their own housing surveys, you will see what a huge need there is. Villebois is unique in the country. It's a one-of-a-kind development. Oregon has it. It's an opportunity. It's going to be noteworthy. It's possible and achievable. It's my vision, and I hope it's yours, too.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you, Dora.
I gather there's no questions.
We're going to hold them, Harold, okay. Until we're
Good morning. My name is Harold Cullum. I live in Milwaukee, Oregon. I have a history of being an educator, a teacher, school principal, president of NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, a number of careers like that. But the most important of all is that I am a father of a girl that is mentally ill and has been mentally ill and stricken with this terrible disease for the last 30 years. We have gone through a lot of cycles in living with her and have shed many tears. But the thing that has always been a big problem was finding proper housing for her. And that encouraged me in 1997 to meet with Representative Loken, who was my legislator at that point. It's ironical, today I'm talking at a hearing in which the chairman is also my legislator. And I'm pleased. It makes me feel good to know that I've got somebody down here that knows who I am. But the point is that we went to work, and Mr. Riley helped me, and Representative Crummel, and a lot of people from NAMI of Clackamas County pitched in, and we got this bill written. It took a lot of work, and we finally thought that we had it. And I'm having a hard time. Why am I here today? And I'm here today because all of a sudden I'm finding that now we have to defend the bill. And I didn't ever dream that that would happen, but it has happened. And because I was told I have to be succinct, so I'm going to stop. And last night I put together some thoughts that I wanted to share with you today. And my wife printed them up for me, but I can't even read what I wrote, because my vision has gotten so bad that I have to call in the troops. So Mr. Riley is going to come up here and read the things that I wanted to say today about this bill 3446.
I believe you have a copy of Harold's.
Yeah, they do.
And I think I just, for the record, I'll read part of it because he's already said quite a bit of it.
And Richard, could you announce who you are?
Oh, yes. My name is Richard Riley. I'm with NAMI Oregon. In part, the letter reads, the closing of the damaged state hospital magnified the already existing problem of insufficient housing for those enduring mental illness. The profits from the sale of the damaged state hospital were set aside in HB 3446 to become a permanent trust fund from which the interest was exclusively dedicated for securing housing, with the principal remaining untouched. For those of us who loved ones who bear mental illness, it's a dream come true, and this dream was guaranteed by the law. I find it ironical that today we're dealing with two definitions of the word trust. In placing money in the trust, it's held safely away in a guardianship relationship to be used for a specific purpose. The other meaning of trust involves a relationship between two parties. With trust, agreed upon terms are assured to be met, not whittled away at. And looking at what's happened, in looking at what is threatened against the agreed upon terms of HB 3446, both definitions are violated. The principal being held in trust is luring those needing funds to seek it. Those who trusted the legislature to keep the fund for its intended purpose are in danger of losing their trust in the process. The intended purposes is being eroded by those wishing to tap into this resource. Read the bill. It's clear. We understand other groups are seeking funds for their needs, including rent subsidies, but that is simply not the original intent. Any weakening invites others to attempt to siphon off money for noble causes. They need look elsewhere. HB 3446 was for one purpose. Let's face it. 10 years ago, a group of dedicated folks worked long and hard to fulfill the promise made to consumers that with the closing of the damaged state hospital, there would be community-based housing for them. The legislature joined us in the celebration, and we were on our way to fulfilling that promise. In a final statement, I appeal to you, stand behind consumers, parents, and other concerned persons as we fight not to lose what we gained. Please do not sidetracked, even by well-meaning groups. A legislative body in 1999 stood by us, and we need 3016 to protect that first promise. I'm sorry, I don't read that well.
You did just fine.
I had to take a page out of a baseball handbook, and that says that when an athlete is injured, you can bring in a pinch runner. Here's with my pinch runner. I think he did a darn good job. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Harold. Any questions of any of these three folks?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Harold, you now have a bunch more friends up here, so you have a bunch more friends up here, and you're welcome back anytime.
Good. You know, I want to just say this on the outside. People are always telling me that, oh, the legislature, you know, they don't even pay attention to us, but that's wrong. And I keep telling everybody, you know, that's not true. Go down there and meet with these legislators. Talk to them. Explain your situation. They are willing to listen. And when we put this bill together, it was a big lesson in civics for me. You can be involved and you can make a difference. And I'm going to keep saying that all the time, even when I lose my vision. Thank you.
You haven't lost your vision, Harold. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to be calling up Ben Wood, Bob Nickel, and Bob Junduff. Would the people from NAMI, I know there are a lot of folks here who are not signed up to speak, but are here on behalf of NAMI. Could you raise up your hands just so we know who you are? Thank you for coming down.
Good morning. My name is Ben Wood, and I'm here with Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare. We're, in addition to being Oregon's largest community-based provider of mental health and addictions treatment services, we are one of Oregon's largest developers and operators of housing for people with mental illnesses. In addition to our existing 760 units of housing, we have more than 220 units currently under development, including a building at Villebois. I wanted to start by thanking everyone who worked so hard to make the project at Villebois a reality and make these funds available to support much-needed housing development. I also am here, though, to share some concerns with House Bill 3016. As organizations like ours work to develop new housing for individuals with mental illnesses, we face several significant challenges, two of which are potentially exacerbated by the changes proposed in House Bill 3016. Many of our projects involve a complicated and cumbersome process of securing capital from upwards of 8 sources to fund the development of new housing units. Therefore, any proposal creating additional boards, committees, reviews, and processes to secure development resources makes an already difficult process more difficult and slows projects down. It is important to keep in mind the capital available from the trust fund often represents less than 2% of the development cost for a new building. The $100,000 is a very small part of what costs upwards of $5 million on a typical project. An even more significant obstacle to housing development than capital scarcity is finding the funds that would provide rent supports. Any prohibition on the use of funds for rent supports related to individual projects further limits our ability to move forward with projects and serve consumers in need of housing. In a world of scarce development capital, we increasingly have to utilize debt in project development. Debt means higher rent, which in turn increases the need for rent subsidies. The reality is that funding rent subsidies will leverage more capital into a project than the existing trust fund can currently grant. I do want to, those are my two substantive points. I do want to just reference back to a project of ours that Mr. Riley commented on, the artist housing. Just to clarify that project for a moment, that's an 88-unit project that we're working on in Portland's West End, a couple of blocks from the Portland Art Museum, of which about 30 units will be live workspace for artists, and the rest will be for folks with mental illness, either meeting the chronically homeless definition or just low-income folks with mental illness. And a big point in this is we really believe in blending the communities that live in buildings. We don't want to and didn't believe it was healthy to create an 88-unit building with entirely units for folks with mental illness. And so with 50-plus units for folks with mental illness and a $100,000 investment on what will be probably a $15 million project at the end of the day. So I just wanted to give that clarity around what that project is. So in closing, thank you for your attention on this issue. We look forward to working with you to ensure the creation of diverse housing opportunities for individuals with mental illness.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Any questions of Mr. Wood? All right, thank you. Bob?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services and responsible for the Addictions and Mental Health Division. I appreciate the opportunity to provide some brief testimony today. I've given a written copy of my testimony, which has a few more technical details. I want to start, first of all, by thanking former Representative Loken and all of the people from NAMI. I've worked with some of them for as many as 20 years, and I have a great deal of respect for what they have done. I'm also here to put on the record, first of all, that we're opposed to House Bill 3016 in the forms, including the amended forms, primarily because it would set up what we think is an unnecessary additional, not a bureaucracy, but a board that would slow down the process of developing facilities even more than it is. It's a cumbersome process. There are a lot of technical real estate and loan issues that already have to be dealt with. And so I want to put that on the record. But I also, equally important, want to put on the record that many of the concerns that have come up, I believe, although not all of them, many of them came up through a rule development process in which when you develop rules, a lot of ideas get tossed around. And some of them, frankly, I think have very much frightened the NAMI membership, and I appreciate their concerns. I want to go on record and say the funds from the damaged property will only be used for people with chronic mental illnesses. I am not going to allow them to be diverted for other populations. The funds may go to combined projects, but I'm very adamant that the funds be used only for that portion of a mixed project, if it's a mixed project, that serves people with chronic mental illnesses. Now, we know that 50 to 75% of people with chronic mental illnesses also have alcohol and drug problems. So it may be that some people have alcohol and drug issues, but the primary target audience and population will be people with chronic mental illnesses. I also want to go on record as saying I'm opposed to the idea of using the fund for rent subsidies. I understand exactly what Mr. Wood has said, that without these kinds of subsidies, at some point these are going to be very difficult projects to sustain. We could build them, but we might not find people who could afford to live there. And so I'm very concerned that we next session have a serious talk about rent subsidy funding. I do not have extra funds in my budget to do that. If I do, I will have to cut crisis services, case management services, supported employment to the degree we have any of that going, and all of those will hurt the very people we're trying to help here. So I think that ultimately we do have to have a serious discussion about rent subsidies with you as legislators, but I think that's going to have to come next session. So I really strongly want to emphasize that I don't have any substantive disagreement with the goals that Representative Loken and other members expressed to you, and I'm going on record as saying this is the position of the division. We are sticking with the original intent of the legislation. And I know that my just saying that now again, because this is not the first time I've said that, but I'm saying it on the record, I hope that will offer some reassurance. In a little bit, I understand there may be another suggestion for another process here. I would be fully supportive of forming an advisory group that would help us oversee this. We always have an advisory group that looks at each and every proposal that comes up, but I recognize and understand the concerns that have been expressed, and if it would be helpful, I want to go on record also as saying I'm very much in favor of an advisory group that would look an awful lot like the board in composition so that we could assure these concerns are addressed on an ongoing basis. So I'd be happy to answer questions now or whenever.
Let's wait and we hear from Mr. Junedef, and then we'll see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Junedef. I'm from the Oregon Advocacy Center. And first of all, I want to acknowledge the folks who testified earlier. In many ways, they're my model and heroes in terms of what they've been able to accomplish for folks with mental illness in this state. The Rileys, the Menards, Harold Colma, I think I've known them for years. The work that they've done has been exemplary. And just bringing the question of housing to you, housing is just absolutely fundamental in terms of reaching success for people with mental illness. And their attention to this very important topic is right on. As their attention almost always is, I'd have to say. That having been said, in terms of looking for a solution for the problem that they're bringing to you, what I have recognized, at least in my work, is that there has been a communication breakdown between advocates and the Office of Addictions and Mental Health. On some of the issues surrounding the damage fund, I think that when you think about all the work that's gone into putting this fund together, that being very concerned about how it's used is absolutely natural and essential. We know resources are scarce, and it's very easy for resources to be channeled off into other areas of need. My sense from the statute and what I personally witnessed is that I don't think that we've had abuses of the state statute that exists right now, but they're possible. And I think that the best way to head those off would be to have ongoing close involvement between advocates and those are family members, consumers, and other advocates in terms of how the trust is administered and how those funds are used. I think the most effective and efficient way to do that would be to have an advisory committee that works closely with the division in order to oversee that process. My greatest concern about the proposal as it stands is what you might call balkanization of the funding for housing across the state. Housing development across is an essential issue across the state. I think it needs to be looked at carefully across the state. Damage Hospital served the entire state population of Oregon. I know I worked in Damage Hospital as an advocate for many years before its closure. And the needs and the people who were served there are coming from all parts of the state. And so we need to look at it as a whole, and we need to have ongoing involvement of advocates across the board. And so at least in my sense is that we would be able to address some of the fears and concerns about the use of these funds more effectively through an advisory board structure that oversaw future implementation, use of trust funds, and other resources for housing development. The last thing I need compelled to say is that it's just how difficult it is to develop housing. You may know that our office filed a lawsuit against Oregon State Hospital now about a year and a half ago, and we completed a settlement agreement of that case that called for the development of additional housing resources for folks in the state hospital. And the state hasn't met the targets for the development of that housing, and we've had an ongoing involvement in the process. And I can tell you that I'd like to stand, Bob knows I'd like to get up here and blame his office for not doing the job that he promised to do. But in fact, what we have learned in the process of working with them is how difficult and complicated it is to effectively develop that housing. And I think it takes all of us working together in order to bring that together for the folks we want to help. So I think the idea of having closer involvement of advocates in that process through an advisory function would be the best way to go.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Junda. Would you respond to that suggestion, please, Mr. Nichol?
Madam Chair, I would be very pleased if we could work with an advisory group. I recognize the communication breakdown. I'm sorry about that. And I think that it's the least we could do is to work very carefully with that kind of a group. And I will make the staff time available to do that.
Thank you. Any questions of any of these witnesses? Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here today. One of the things we received from, I believe, Mr. Riley was a historical review. Can you tell me where Senate Bill 222 in the last session came from?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, I do not have that in my memory bank at the moment.
Oh, that's the one that redefined or liberalized types of housing to be owned, managed, funded by the department, allowed the department to declare housing no longer suitable and sell it for use of any purpose. I'm just wondering, that seems to be something that happened along the way that changed how you were doing things. I'm just wondering if that was where that bill came from, if you remember it. I can look also.
Manager Representative Kotek, you know, there's a memory trace that suggests that the department may have brought that forward, but I really cannot remember. I'd be happy to go back and look at that.
Okay.
But I just want to restate on the record that my intent is to use the damaged trust funds in the way they were originally intended, and that is to create housing for people with chronic mental illnesses.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Any further questions of this? So what I'm hearing is that the two Bobs are willing to, maybe all three gentlemen, willing to work together regarding this fund to work so that the group from NAMI that has some real concerns about preserving this fund for housing, not just for the homeless, but for the severely mentally ill, that these folks would have definite input on how those monies would be spent from the damage fund. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my reference point here is that this would be an advisory committee that would work closely with us. We would retain the authority that I think we need to have in order to move projects along. And we will take seriously the advice that any advisory committee comes forward with.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Madam Chair, I'm just follow up. Are you wanting to move on this quickly then? Have them, the group get together or something like that and get back to us really quick?
That's my intent.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Members of the committee, if I could we get a little bit more direction, or should we provide the direction in terms of the composition or who would appoint such an advisory committee? Right now, I think the way the bill read, it was a governor's appointed panel, but we just need to have a little guidance, I think, from you.
I think what I would like to should I close this and
probably
open a work session?
Session?
Okay. Do we have any more questions? At least you can stay there. And I'm going to close this and go into a work session on House Bill 3016. So my feeling is, and I'm willing to hear from the rest of the committee, is that there is some sense here that something can be worked out with the folks who have concerns from NAMI, concerns about how this pot of money is being used. What I'd like to see is, rather than another law, is to see if this can be worked out. I sense from all of the committee that everybody is very concerned about this issue. We want to move on it. If it can be done without us passing a bill, then that's great. If we need to pass a bill, we can do that. So I think what we'd like to see, and I'm speaking for myself, and I'm happy to hear from the rest of the committee, what I'd like to see is some working together with the folks from NAMI who have expressed concern about this to see if this can be worked out. Am I open to other feedback?
Well, Madam Chair, I agree. Go ahead.
Representative Gelser? Would it be your intention that they would work together today and come back to us with a report on Monday so we would either
I would like something back by the end of today so that I can know if we have to come back into work session on Monday.
So we'll roll this over to Monday just to be sure? Okay.
So, Representative... Okay. Representative Billing.
I am never against, you know, more cooperative talk, but I am convinced that we need to doubly lock what the original intent was, and I would love it if we would move the dash threes, but I will defer to your judgment.
Thank you. If you can hold off, we'll see what can happen and see if we need to do that. Any other feedback from the committee?
Well, now that Representative Gilliam down here said that, I have to admit, I do like the flavor of the dash threes, but if the group could get together toward that. So.
Okay, is that Representative Collin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the effort to try to get together and solidify a clear intent advisory committee. I have some discomfort with the dash threes in the transfer of funds, because I think that gets complicated, and that's what concerns me about the direction of this. So my preference would be, if it needs to be in legislation, limited to the relationship building and the advisory status rather than a transfer of money. That's where my concerns are with the current direction.
Okay. Thanks for letting us know. Any other? Okay. I would like some feedback by 3 this afternoon about whether or not this can be worked out and whether or not we need to go to work session on Monday. All right. Any questions about that? Any questions on your part? Okay. Thank you very much. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3016. Okay. I'm going to open up the work session on 3324.
House Bill 3324 is a bill that would require the Department of Human Services to establish a task force on problem gambling to study the cost to state government and the state economy resulting from the emotional and behavioral problems related to gambling. It would also require the department to submit their findings to the Legislative Assembly by September 30th, 2008.
Thank you, Andy. We talked about this earlier this week. As we talked about, there is a pot of money that is dedicated to gambling addiction treatment, but it has never been really given to the Addictions and Mental Health Division for that use. There is a pot of $2 million. So what I'd like to do is send this to Ways and Means so that they can secure those monies and then put together a task force on problem gambling in Oregon. Representative Gilliam.
Where's the pot?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I asked the department to... So I handed out a little bit of the funding history on the...
Oh, great. Oh,
there's also an email on the backside of the sheet from Dr. Murata about... I highlighted there where we are currently in the co-chair's budget. We are on track at this point to only provide 0.9% of lottery revenues for gambling treatment, and that a carry forward would be transferred out of the treatment fund to the economic development fund. That's what's currently proposed. And then this gives you a history. So I just want to give you the numbers. There's a ending fund balance in the gambling treatment fund of $2.2 million. And that would be in addition to the existing 0.9% that's being considered at this point. Does that make sense for folks?
Yeah.
So this gives you a sense of the carryover and what we should, if they had been getting the 1% and actually spending the 1%, what the difference was.
Right. And we know that there is a great need for this. Representative Gelser.
Madam Chair, one of the reasons that I like this beyond the merit of studying this issue is I think that it raises the opportunity when we move this to Ways and Means to look at that question. Sometimes it's very hard in human service types of budgets to project exactly what will be spent. But when we have programs that biennium after biennium are not either being allocated or able to spend everything that we think is going to them and then it's getting reallocated to other places in the reshoot, I think that leaves the legislature unclear about what it is that we're actually funding. I know that this happens in some areas that I'm concerned about, and it could free up some ability for us to do some policy things that we might like to do.
Great. Good point. So, Representative Kotek, you are on the Ways and Means Sub for Human Services, so I'm sure that you can advocate for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to see this bill go forward and have this discussion.
Great.
In connection to this bill.
Terrific. So, let's see, we have a dash one amendment, don't we? Andy is here. Yes, we do have a dash one amendment.
We do?
Well, I thought we did. It's listed. And I've lost Andy.
You know, I'm not sure we have one for this. I think there's.
I'm sure that we have one.
I don't think we do.
Well, we have one actually, but I think it wasn't given. It's after line 14. We're supposed to add money transferred in accordance that will be used for the task force. So why don't we hold off on this until Andy gets back and he can let us know what we need to do with that.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The amendment would specify that this is lottery money, right?
It specifies that it would be lottery money and it would part of it would be used on a task force.
But the bill doesn't say that right now. Am I right?
No.
Okay. So that's what we need.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to close the work session on this until Andy gets back. I'm closing the work session on 3324, and I'm going to open up the work session on House Bill 2951. And Andy, here's to talk about it. Representative Callan, I'm going to let you talk about this.
I'm sorry.
Madam Chair?
2951.
Yes.
We have some guests on one. I'm wondering if we could move one up.
On what? Which
on
one?
2646.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on 2951 and open up the work session on 2646?
Correct.
2646. All right. Representative Callan, we'll let you off the hook for a minute.
I was ready.
Okay, let me see if I can find. This would allow the Department of Human Services to provide grants to nonprofit organizations for alcohol and drug abuse prevention and treatment. So, Susan, can you get me the sign-up list for this, please?
Okay. How many copies do I need?
Many.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Okay, we have a huge list. And we have less than an hour. We have several more bills, so I'm going to ask you to be very succinct in your testimony. I would appreciate it. So I'm going to call up, we have several people who live more than 100 miles away, so I'm going to call them up first. Is it Hillary Wiley and Bruce Piper and Todd Munsey? Could you come up, please? Introduce yourselves, please, and move ahead.
I'm Hillary Wiley. I represent Oregon Treatment Network, and I'm the Executive Director of Willamette Family Treatment in Eugene. Madam Chair, I believe you visited with us last the session.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm also an elected official. I'm a Springfield City Council person, and I study good public policy and bad public policy. It's part of my other job. And one of the things that has affected us is our inability to apply directly to the state for grants and service contracts. And this is bad public policy. I've included in your handout our annual report, and we have 138 employees. We're a $5.5 million agency. That's our annual budget. And we are one of the, we've been providing services for alcohol and drug addicts for the state of Oregon about 35 years. I think we are representative of the system of care for the state of Oregon. And in 1999, we were then prohibited from applying directly to the state for grants that comes through the counties. Now, we are partners with the counties, and we work very hard on our county relationships. But we have other resources than just the state. We have federal resources, local resources. We raise money. We use private insurance. We are closest to the field. We know what is needed in the field. And our ideas and our resources need to be brought to bear when an opportunity comes from the state to apply for funds. Let me give you an example. In 1991, our agency competed and won a statewide bid to do women and children's treatment. We pioneered women and children's treatment. Up to that time, women had to give up their children to foster care to get help for their drug problems. We designed and built programs that allowed pregnant, addicted women to come into treatment and have babies born drug-free. We saved millions of dollars because babies aren't going through the neonatal unit being drug-affected. We saved millions of dollars through foster care and other problems with drug addiction. One of the reasons we can do that is because we could bring our ingenuity and our resources to this program. We were allowed to bid on this program. We have successfully run this program. Last year, 27 babies were born in our agency, drug-free to pregnant, addicted women. So we need to be able to have the freedom to apply for these grants. All right, now the money goes through the county. It is a small thing. Tribes can apply. Counties can apply. But we, as your public contractor, we are your public contractor for the state of Oregon, cannot. And I think it's a simple matter to allow that freedom of business, freedom to allow us to work with the state as well. Like I said, that doesn't change our county partnership, so the dollars still will probably flow through the county mechanism. But we need to be able to create the grant, create the ideas, make these valuable contributions ourselves, and have the opportunity to apply for an RFP.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Bruce Piper. I'm also representing the Oregon Treatment Network. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 2646. Oregon Treatment Network provides treatment services in over 40 sites throughout Oregon, and including regional services. And I thought the best way to illustrate to you the importance from our perspective of this bill is to try to give you a sense with some scenarios that we've experienced or our peers have experienced. Adding back, and I emphasize adding back because it used to be there, three words into Oregon law, nonprofit organizations, into eligibility for bidding is a very important thing. And I think you'll agree as you hear these scenarios. You are a board member, a voluntary board member of a parents relief nursery that's very pleased at the services to meth-affected children that the organization provides. And the legislature appropriated some money and is put out for bid via DHS for the kind of services your organization, the Relief Nursery, provides. Your proposal that you develop is supported by the local SDA manager from the Department of Human Services, and it's also based on the county needs list of what are the prioritized needs. Do you bid? No, you don't. You're not eligible. It's 1998, and you have a conversation.
No, I see that you've got three pages of testimony.
If yes.
It should be maybe just sort of summarize what your points are. That would be really helpful.
That's going to be very tough.
I know it is.
You can read through these scenarios, and what they will describe to you is example after example after example of how essentially at the nonprofit level, what we represent is energy, ideas, advocacy, local fundraising that is circumscribed by the fact that we're unable, despite after for years and years and years advocating with our county partners for increased funding for services in this area, we're essentially got one arm tied behind our back. If you want a visual, the nonprofit community in Oregon relative to substance abuse is a 3-inch water pipe of ideas, energy, and expertise that is essentially trying to be pushed through a straw back to Salem because we don't have access. Now, bear in mind, if you look at the Criminal Justice Services Division, the Department of Corrections, the Child Welfare, MDHS, all across the board, we are eligible bidders except AMH. Why is that? Why wouldn't we want, which existed up to 1999 for decades, what Hillary was just describing, are scenarios where we did bid, where we did bring services into local communities, but since 1999, our eligibility was rendered ineligible. And since that time, we've been operating with one arm tied behind our back. We're asking for your support in allowing us to bring to the state of Oregon and to our communities the full energy that we have as organizations. Nowhere else can I think you look and see that we, in any kind of economic development model, would we want to try to do this. And if the federal government did the same thing and used the same model, if you know, the last example I gave, if the federal government issued a press release today and said, henceforth, the only applicant from Oregon anymore is the state mental health division. Counties can't apply for National Institute of Drug Abuse, National Institute of Mental Health, National Institute of Health, Center for Substance Abuse Treatment. If all those federal agencies adopted the same model and the only applicant could be Bob Nickelshop, none of us would like that in our local communities, but that's essentially what we've done with the existing model in this state since 1999.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in favor of House Bill 2646. My name is Todd Muncy. I live at 660 Northeast Jade in Sutherland, Oregon. I'm employed in the private sector with Electric Use Cooperative down there, and I have the pleasure of serving on the board for Adaptive Southern Oregon Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention and Treatment. From an outsider looking in some respects, not being involved in the gory details and the intimate details of the workings, what I see is an organization that has many partnerships with employers and chambers of commerce and schools, and certainly not the least of which is the county. We have an excellent relationship with Douglas County in many capacities down there. I look for that to continue. The solutions that are taking place and the people that are being helped through our programs, through the county's programs, and everybody involved in being part of the solution are just phenomenal. We have an opportunity to see from time to time the results of the efforts of everybody taking place down there. It is of value, in my opinion, to include ADAPT and other nonprofits in being part of the solution. From an elected official, and I didn't realize this with Hillary, City Council, City of Sutherland, it's my responsibility as a city councilor to maximize all of the public funds that we have to get the most mileage out of them, and not really wanting to exclude any qualified source or option for maximizing those dollars and achieving the best results. So, in summary, and I thought you all would like that.
my favorite phrase.
That is my only hope is that when we're talking public funds, that we maximize those public funds through all options available, not excluding anyone, but having everyone be a part of the solution that's so desperately needed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Any questions of this panel? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The two of you have indicated your experience as city councilors, and I'm wondering, when you have the obligation to plan for services in your community and you have a funding source that is already somewhat unstable, wouldn't it undermine those planning efforts to every year have some of that funding questionable, not knowing if that funding is coming to you or if it's going someplace else, and how those services may or may not blend with the other services that you are obligated to provide and ensure to your citizens?
Madam Chair, Representative Gelzer, we're under that situation right now. All of our services that we contract with the state come up for review and reapplication every 2 years. even though we have invested in facilities and so forth and so forth and so forth, we must reapply for our funding every 2 years. Our funding is based on what the legislature does. So we work with local planning efforts as far as we work with the counties, we work with the state, we participate in the state plan to provide those services. What this issue is about is that when an opportunity comes up to do a pilot around the state, we would like the opportunity to bid on that.
Members and staff only. This is a drill, earthquake. What do you do? All clear, thank you.
Thank you.
Only heard.
At least a little political theater there.
We need to move that bill faster. Mental health led thing.
Madam Chair,
that was fine.
But I was wondering, in the interest of time, if I could clarify my question.
Very quickly. We need to move on.
What
were we talking about?
Obviously, you need to.
We were talking about the stability of planning for integrated services for vulnerable people. And maybe I'll just clarify what my point is. I understand that there's some instability, obviously, when cities and counties and local government contracts with the state. I'm concerned that while this is well-intentioned, it will increase that instability by adding yet another factor. And in the end, I'm concerned that that might not be in the best interest of the clients that everybody agrees that we're trying to serve.
Thank you. We're going to move on. Thank you so much.
I just have one very more quick piece. Okay, very quickly. I've had difficulty in the past when an opportunity has come and I've gone to the counties and said, we can do this, we want to apply for it, will you work with us? And if they're not ready to do it, if they don't have, I've had answers like, well, we don't have a grant writer right now, or we're not interested in this program, or we think another agency would be better off to do it. I mean, we should be able to do this, and it does conform with the local planning efforts.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for coming to testify. We really appreciate it. Sorry we had to rush you along. Jan Kaplan, who has driven up from Lincoln County. Thank you so much, Jan. And Jeff Hetherington from Polk County. I think those are the only ones who have driven more than 100 miles away. You come. Oh, if you're from Dallas, then forget it. Anybody else more than 100 miles away? Mm-hmm. Okay, come on up. I was just kidding.
Now he's forgot what he was going to say.
And you know, I'm going to ask you to speak succinctly and quickly.
I will do my best.
Thank you.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee. My name is Jan Kaplan. I'm the director of the Lincoln County Health and Human Service Department. I live in Newport, and I'm also the president of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. And I'm testifying in opposition to House Bill 2646. From a local point of view, we would see this bill as really accomplishing nothing that can't currently be done while increasing costs and creating serious harm, particularly the state and local government partnership that is so much a part of the fabric of our providing comprehensive services to the best within our resources. As a local mental health and addiction authority, our counties and our boards of commissioners have the responsibility to create cohesive community plans to address the full continuum of needs in addictions and mental health, and that's always arguable as what those are. But we have established authorities in this state, and that's how we've sought to create comprehensiveness. And sometimes, when somebody's not funded or somebody doesn't agree, doesn't mean the process isn't good. Within our counties and creating those comprehensive plans, the citizen participation is required. We all have local alcohol and drug prevention committees that are in my county. They certainly hold my feet to the fire. as well as our providers, and we're accountable to our boards of commissioners, to the public through, because we're local government, to really address the full range, and that includes being accountable to our nonprofits. They're part of our partnership. And as part of that process, is local governments provide a lot of funding, local funding into the process, as well as a great deal of in-kind services. Another point I would make briefly is that it's our duty and responsibility, and jointly with the state, to meet state and local priorities. And one of those priorities has been the recognition and the need to provide services that are comprehensive for people who are duly affected by mental illness and by addictions. And this bill would create a silo, would create in the addictions field a separateness that would make it another step to try to coordinate rather than forcing it through a local process that is already seeking and doing that. It doesn't accomplish any, there's no more money into the process. It just creates a fragment. In my county, we already contract about a third of the funding that comes to us from the state. We contract out to a nonprofit and work in partnership with them. And because it's one investment. We're obviously seeking to get the best out of that from both ends. We're mutually tied. I would point out that this bill is brought forward by OTN, which is five organizations, the broader organization of in Oregon, the trade organization of the nonprofits, does not support this bill. They're neutral on it. I think that's telling.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
I'm working on it, and I will. Just to note that, in fact, a significant number of federal grants and of in the mental health and addictions field are, in fact, targeted specifically. The only applicants can be local governments and tribes very frequently. That's not always the case, but it certainly is the case very frequently. So in closing, I would say that on behalf of our county mental health and addictions authorities, I can't begin to tell you how much we value the partnership between our local government entities and the state. And I hope that in thinking about this bill, because I see this as potentially being a precedent setter in that could harm that. And so I would hope that you would each reflect upon the value of that partnership as you consider what to do with this bill. And thank you very much for allowing me to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for coming up to Salem to testify today. Go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair and member of the committee. I live in Linn County with a Corvallis address and work in Dallas, which is Polk County, so I get around every day. Polk County has a long tradition of being involved with service integration. We have service integration teams in each of the school districts of the county. And
did you give us your name?
Oh, excuse me. Jeff Hetherington. I'm director for Polk County Mental Health. And kind of going back and looking at Senate Bill 256, which is evidence-based practice, I see the potential for this to water that down in that Dr. Ken Minkoff would tell us, he's a nationally renowned psychiatrist working in dual diagnosis field, that up to 90% of the people who walk in doors have both a substance abuse issue and a mental health issue. And we've worked very hard within the BCN, which is the five-county MHO, to bring the integration of mental health and addictions together. Over the past 3 years, I've done a significant amount of reorganization within my department to ensure that we have a welcoming environment which will look at the issues of a holistic manner. We use an ASAM assessment tool. We have an addictionologist who's a psychiatrist with extra work, and we really work closely with the whole team within my department. We have an addictions team, I have a mental health team. Secondly, Polk County with Marion County has a fund, the Marion Polk Community Health Plan, and we work with nonprofits directly in providing services already for people who have an addiction issue. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you for being succinct.
Yes.
Any questions of either of these two gentlemen?
Manager, how many more people do we have?
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Okay.
Actually, I think some people have signed up twice, so maybe 7 or 8. Okay. Thank you so much for coming today. All right, Chris Johnson, Mitch Anderson, and Linda, is it Modrell? You know the drill.
Go ahead. I'll just begin. Chair Tomei and Representatives Olson and Gelser, who represent portions of Benton County, of which I'm a county commissioner of. Greetings to you all. Thanks for your time. I support everything that was just said by the previous folks who testified. I'll just add that we are, the legislators and the county commissioners, are responsible for several systems of services. And the word, the operative word here is systems. And many of these systems are interconnected. And this is in a number of areas. Health and public safety are just two of those systems. We're not well served by fragmenting systems. It costs more, and the service isn't as good. Counties invest, many counties invest a significant amount of local dollars in these systems that you also fund. And this is important, I think, in terms of considering dismantling these systems. If we want to improve or change a system, that is best done by thoughtful and careful planning, not taking a bill at a time, but a comprehensive look at it that would look at the whole system and avoid any unintended consequences. There's plenty of room for private and public providers with appropriate financial and professional capacity in these systems. The trick is to maintain system integrity and accountability. So I am testifying in opposition of this bill. I don't think it's a thoughtful approach. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Tomei, members of the committee, I'm Mitchell Anderson. I am a citizen of Benton County. I am also a deputy administrator at the Benton County Health Department. I'm in charge of the Mental Health Addictions and Developmental Disabilities Program, and I'm past president of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. My primary duty, as I see it, for our county is to carry out the functions of the local Mental Health and Addictions Authority, and that means assuring a system of services and supports for persons with addictions, mental health problems, and disabilities. I'm testifying here today in opposition to 2646 because I believe that the bill will undermine the role of the local Mental Health and Addictions Authority and lead to fragmentation in the planning and delivery of services. I don't see this as a mechanism or a solution to what sounds to me like, from some of the prior testimony, like local relationship problems between the county and private providers. Additionally, the county and the state have been partners for 30 years in the planning and delivery of these kinds of services. counties provide many assurance functions, quality functions for this system. We also, as Commissioner Madrell said, provide a lot of additional funding to these services. And we take very seriously our role of assuring that the needs are met and invested in the right ways in our communities. I'm proud of Benton County's support for the services, and what I would hate to see is that this effort diminish what we do by shifting part of the service system out from under the planning and assurance umbrella that the local authority role provides. We're all struggling with the rising cost of health care, and together must continue to work towards an efficient and coordinated system of services within the resource realities. This bill doesn't help that effort. This bill will further fragment the service system and erode the local planning and assurance functions, and it'll ultimately cost the state more money with the burden of additional procurement and contract monitoring processes. So again, I hope you would oppose this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for being succinct.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Johnson. I'm the Health and Human Services Director in Yamhill County. I've been the Director of McMinnville since 1985, and I'm very aware of the complex nature of these systems. And I think to keep things brief, I'd like to underscore that the state is not simply making grants to provide for treatment of addictions or mental health. The state is making an investment to protect the citizens of Oregon, to provide for community safety, and making an investment in offsetting rising costs in a variety of other areas of state government, corrections, child welfare, and medical care, to name probably the three most important. But there's certainly many other areas of government where addictions and people that go untreated in their addictions provide a cost to the state. In order to manage those costs and to provide for that community safety, we need to have a local governmental entity that can plan for improved services, prioritize limited resources, coordinate complex systems, and assure that all of that goes well. And no offense to the leadership of addictions and mental health, but they do not have the staff or the expertise to provide those four critical functions that we provide at the local level. And if you move the system away to the state just granting grants, I do not believe they have the capacity to provide the oversight that local counties provide. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've had this question for the last couple of panels, but since you're all here, we'll ask it to you, and anyone can answer. I'd like to see some effort to retain the system integrity that I'm hearing about in the planning. I get that. But sometimes we need to have flexibility to respond to potential funding opportunities. And so I'm just wondering if there would be any interest in amending this to say if applying for that grant would be in line with local planning, allowing the nonprofits to do that. Because I know how counties work as well. I mean, you're busy. If someone comes to you and say, we can apply for this, but, you know, frankly, people are too busy to deal with it, but it's within your local planning idea, and they have the wherewithal to go do it, I don't understand why we couldn't say it's within the plan, and we think it's a good thing for our plan, then you should go out and pursue that money. And maybe I'm missing something here. So I'm wondering if there's a compromise here. Directly applying with disregarding the planning, I understand.
I'm wondering why a joint application wouldn't occur.
And follow up, Madam Chair?
Follow up.
What I guess my question is, everyone's being polite. Why do we have this bill before us if everything is working well?
Maybe it isn't working well for some folks.
Can follow up? Can you just?
I can't speak to the problems that I just heard. Mm-hmm. I know that the way that we operate in Benton County is that we are interested in new ideas. If somebody wants to write a grant and we can see where we fit into that and that we can provide oversight and accountability, that it fits into the statewide plan that we have, or the countywide plan that we've submitted to the state, why wouldn't we do that? This sounds like more of a relationship issue as opposed to a system problem. And so to do a bill, to pass a bill that would fix a relationship problem in selected areas doesn't, to me, make a lot of policy sense. From my point of view, I'm chair of the Local Government Advisory Committee to DHS. If we have a pervasive problem here, I would like to know about it, and we could begin, it would be a good place to start in the committee that I chair, along with Bruce Goldberg's leadership from DHS, to take a what is the problem? We don't know that there's a problem.
Follow-up? Quick follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate that response. I guess the converse of that is, if some counties have best practices, like you're suggesting, that's what you're indeed doing, but other counties are not, does it help to kind of claim some of that in statute to say, this is what we're actually hoping you're doing, but maybe you're not all doing it? I'm just throwing, I don't know, but I'm not hearing problems from your county, but I guess there might be some other counties.
Well, and the commissioners have a responsibility for the entire system.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard testimony about dual diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do we do there? Seems to me that we're not spending our money very wisely if we create more silos than we have already. Mm-hmm. But I am not a practitioner. These two gentlemen are and can address that better than I.
if there's a quick response, but we're going to move on. Go ahead.
Well, Chair Tomei and Representative Kotek, I guess how I would answer is, underscoring what Commissioner Modrell said, it is a local relationship issue. I have examples in our community where there are nonprofits that are providing services on a grant that only the county could apply for. And it was a very simple process to get together, have them bring forward their good ideas, put them in a form, and we submit it on their behalf. It's not a lot of extra work for the county to do that, yet it assures that the discussion is together and that the services happen in the right way. If a nonprofit just goes off and gets a grant without that discussion, we feel sort of blindsided and don't know how it fits in the whole picture. And again, when all of our systems have such limited resources right now, it's just essential that the things we pick to do meet the needs of the community. And we're involved in the citizen process that determines those needs, not typically the nonprofits by themselves.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Olson and then Representative Cowan, then we're going to move on.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. This is going to be really quick. This is just kind of a catch-all together here from this discussion here. Jeff Hetherington from Pope County mentioned Senate Bill 672, evidence-based practice that this building, this body, put together back in 2003. The community health group is one of the four that that's directed toward. So my question, I guess, then to Mitch and Chris, under 672, don't you see that that there's the avenue there for the relationship and everything, and where you're wanting to get done?
I'd like a little clarification.
Question, of all the different things that are identified for different the practices for reaching out to local, to the nonprofits, that's part of it.
Well, that's correct, but evidence-based practices, more and more as we, and I talked about focusing on our mission, as we focus our mission to a smaller group of people with more severe disabilities, you most often find people that have multiple issues. They may be in the child welfare system, in the correctional system, have an addiction, and have a mental health condition. And a lot of the evidence has been practice in unique kind of siloed practices, and pulling all that together is a very difficult and complex process. And frankly, I wouldn't recommend any single entity being able to apply separately for grants. I think it ought to be a coordinated process. So if there were a group of mental health providers here, it was mentioned child welfare does apply direct grants, and I've seen one of those go very much against local planning. And I think if you really want to do something for the state, I think you ought to take a look at the ability of child welfare to make direct grants. I don't think it's been a good process.
Thank you. Representative Cowan has a question. I need to ask the committee. We're coming close, and we still have several bills. Can people stay beyond 10:30? Is there anybody who cannot?
I think 11 o'clock is the schedule.
Right, I know. But we have until 11. Great, but we're still going to try to rush through very quickly. Okay, Representative Cowan, you have a quick question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm hoping that perhaps Commissioner Modrell could help us kind of pull this together. I can see from my perspective as a former county commissioner an understanding that may be different than the rest of the committee. And that, I draw you back to the testimony from Jan Kaplan, the director of the Lincoln County Health and Human Services, speaking to the fact that the local mental health and addiction authority, through that, counties have the responsibility to create a cohesive community plans to address the full continuum. I think that in our minds we're moving off into sort of that big world of grants out there, and no one is stopping from any strong program from applying for a grant that might be helpful. But we have a kind of a funnel of money that comes through the state for which we have some responsibility and moves on through the county programs because by law counties are the the Mental Health Authority, and they then try to put together a comprehensive plan and a delivery of services, some of which are county services and some of which are in cooperation with our community providers. And so because of the commissioner's role, I was hoping maybe she could pull that together.
Sounds
for
like
us a little bit, or at least confirm what I just said.
I certainly would confirm what Representative Cowan says. We're not only putting together plans in terms of addiction and mental health and all of those health-related things, but we're also making sure that they're congruent with the Commission on Children and Families Planning. This is a very large process that involves bringing the nonprofits to the table, bringing other state agencies to the table, bringing parents, consumers, just a whole number of stakeholders to the table. And we hope to be able to give people pieces of opportunity to help strengthen the system and, where it's appropriate, to actually provide direct service. But it needs to fit into this comprehensive, integrated, fairly complex planning mechanism that deals with very complex problems.
I'm going to thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's been very helpful. Thank you so much for coming. Joanne Fuller, Ralph Bruner, and Janet Carlson. Mary, I think you're here for Ralph.
Yep.
Okay.
You don't look like Ralph.
Sorry. Since your time is short, I'll go ahead and start while the testimony
is being passed
out.
Thank you so much.
I'm Joanne Fuller, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am the director of Multnomah County's Department of Human Services, and I'm here today to oppose House Bill 2646. I want to let you know that the Board of County Commissioners in Multnomah County voted on yesterday, to oppose this bill formally. I have to say that in Multnomah County, we work with many wonderful nonprofits who provide the bulk of the services in the community. We contract with them to provide those services, and we couldn't do it without them. So this really is what we really try to do in our role as the local mental health authority, is to plan comprehensive services, assess needs, make sure that we're looking at the totality of issues in our community, and then work directly with those fine organizations to deliver the services. We have been implementing evidence-based practices in Multnomah County. Following the passage of Senate Bill 267, we've worked very diligently to identify what we can do to serve clients, particularly clients that have multiple system issues, who are in the criminal justice system, have drug and alcohol needs, and also have mental health needs as well. Many times, if they're women, they also have child abuse, abandonment, and neglect issues. And so what we do in our role as the Mental Health Authority is try to implement those best practices across the whole system, make sure that that system is integrated in that implementation. Our county also adds about $10.3 million a year of county general fund to our addictions treatment system, and we integrate that money with the money that we get directly from the state to deliver the services at the community level. And I think that if we start extracting the state money from the county money, we then risk a fragmentation and potentially a diluting of our county's investment in local dollars in this system. And so I really don't want to see that happen in our organization and in our community. Just in closing, I want to say that we in Multnomah County, we take our responsibility in working with the whole community very seriously. And so as the local mental health authority, we also bring to the table the housing authority, child welfare, mental health, drug and alcohol, the police, the cities in our county, in our comprehensive planning efforts. And I think that, again, if there are direct grants from the state, we run the risk of eroding the contact and the integration with those other entities that we're able to bring in our role as the local mental health authority. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming to testify. Janet?
Good morning, Representative Tomei, members of the committee. Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. I'm here this morning in my capacity as the chair of the Association of Oregon County's Human Services Steering Committee. The committee took a position in opposition to this bill in April, and also the Special Operations Committee of the broader Association of Oregon Counties is opposed to the bill. And I do want to say at the outset that I have the utmost respect for Mr. Tressider and for the providers that he represents and the services that they provide. I also want to mention that I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but you all know that we have a system that's grossly underfunded, and that we all, if we had the ideal, we would have treatment for people when they're ready for that treatment, that they could move directly into that. And I appreciate all of your efforts on our behalf to try to seek out different sources of additional resources. However, as you have heard, and I won't belabor all the points that you've heard before, we do have a mental health and addiction system, first of all, and co-occurring disorders, and sort of that chicken and egg, are people mentally ill and then they self-medicate with substance abuse, do they use substance abuse, and then as a result get mental health issues. There are a number of issues that we're facing right now in my community and across the state. Also, I did not provide any printed testimony other than to go on the internet and to find one section of statute, which is ORS 43630, that deals with the mental health authorities, because you've heard a lot today about we are the mental health authority and about planning, and so I just pulled out a small section of statute. I didn't want to just give you pages and pages, you have the book, about how that is defined in statute and what those planning requirements are. And as you can see, we take that very seriously. We have great responsibility there. And there are a number of different facets that are required in that planning process. When I became a county commissioner in 2003, we were in the midst of the sixth special session. I think we were in Amendment 35 or something of our contract with the Department of Human Services in terms of the dollars that were coming to the county. So we are able to manage those resources in good times and help figure out how we add capacity. But what we have been dealing with since I've been a county commissioner is managing those resources in times of reduction, and have to figure out how you balance all of that system and make sure that the people who need the service get the service, and that you're targeting those resources where they're needed most in the community. I failed to mention that Commissioner Bill Hall from Lincoln County serves as vice chair of my committee. You have his testimony before you as well. He couldn't be here today but sent the printed testimony. And finally, I just would suggest that I don't think anyone is saying that the system that we have is perfect. Certainly it's not funded appropriately, and there are pieces of the system that could be better. I think that's a broader discussion than simply bringing in a bill to add another player in terms of the granting process. Commissioner Modrell mentioned that the local government advisory committee would be open to having the discussion. I would be happy to participate in any work group that this body would set up, or if you would like the Human Services Steering Committee to be involved in looking at what some of the underlying issues are and to be able to bring some suggestions forward. We've had numerous mental health task forces, and you've got all of their reports. Anyway, I just wanted to make that that offer to you. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mary.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Bach, and I'm here this morning representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We're in a unique position that we represent folks who work both for the counties and for many of the nonprofit providers. The challenge that we see with this bill is it avoids one of what we think is the most serious challenges in this system, and that is parity. Parity for the employees and parity for funding on addiction services at the same level that we fund other health care needs. Not that any of them are funded properly, but certainly the ugly stepchild seems to be mental health and addiction services. Having said that, our concern, one of our underlying concerns, is that we are currently only meeting about 15% of the need. This bill does nothing to expand the base of services and to expand the reach of services to an underserved and unserved population. Counties are required to match federal or state funds. And if our providers, in some cases, had to meet that same requirement, they would not be able to. And that would decrease the funding available from where it is now. And I don't think that was the proponent's position or desired effect. Again, this is a bill that brings about a lot of unintended consequences, and I hate that term, but it really does. And we're opposing it. We're opposing it for a couple of reasons. We don't want to see more of our county jobs reduced to minimum wage jobs in contracted out private entities. Instead, what we'd rather do is spend our energy and our resources and our time figuring out a way to bring those employees of the nonprofits' wages and benefit levels up to county employee levels, not bring county employees down. And so, having said that, you've
in
got
conclusion.
My written testimony. What?
In conclusion.
In conclusion. You have my testimony in front of you. Those are my comments, and we're done.
Thank you so much. Right. Any questions of this panel? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we have Gordon Fultz and Bob Nichol. And is there anyone else who is here to testify on this bill? All right. Bob, go ahead.
Members of the committee, again, my name is Bob Nichol, Deputy or Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services, Addictions and Mental Health Division. I'm here to testify on House Bill 2646. After a lot of consideration within the department, we eventually landed on a soft no. The reasons for that is the department recognizes the key partnership by statute and by history of the counties in social service delivery. It goes back, as you probably know, to 1843 in the organization of the territorial government. But it's also clearly outlined in statute, as has been noted. We also recognize the vital role that private nonprofit and other providers play. Much of the A&D system, frankly, is already provided by private nonprofit organizations. But we came down on the side of publicly accountable planned systems of care and certainly want to preserve the local funding, as has already been testified. So for those reasons, we're testifying in opposition to House Bill 2646.
Thank you very much.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, Gordon Fultz, Association of Oregon Counties. Very, very quickly, I scraped around to try to find my slick chart that you're getting, the laminated version that basically, and I know some of you have them, some of you don't. Basically, this is the display in red of all of the services that counties provide in partnership with the state, including the mental health and addictions that's been discussed. So I wanted you to have that again so you know that it's just not in that system. It's in all of those systems that we try to create the integration and the work between those systems. The other points that I'd raise with you, and I've been around a long time in this business, and I can only tell you that in the past, one of the concerns has been the inequities that occur in revenues that are available in different counties. And you've had all kinds of packages to try to produce some kind of equity. The reason for that, two reasons for that. One is population, and the other was grants that went out and created the inequities in different places. And that's part of the problem. And we're trying to keep everything in the system. But when it was done before the other way, we created different kinds of revenue streams that were coming to different counties that created the inequities that we tried to fix in the last few years. So keeping this in the systems that we have, I think, is very, very important. I think the nonprofits are very important as part of that system. We're working with that, and that's all I would leave with you with is basically the testimony we have and that wonderful chart. One other thing. I'm sorry. I did mean to go through this. The other chart you have, it's a second page because it was discussed earlier, is our shared services budget comparisons. These are numbers on the right-hand side of this chart. You'll see eight services that the counties provide in partnership with the state. On the right side of that chart, basically the revenues that are put into the system, discretionary revenues from counties in the 03-05 biennium, in each of those systems by the number of counties reporting. Now, not all counties reported on all of those systems, but you can see in mental health and alcohol and drug, $60 million from the 27 counties that reported were put into those systems. You had heard one county testify. I thought I'd share this with you as well.
Thank you very much.
That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. If you want to stay and see if there are any questions. Thank you so much. With that, colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2646. And That's the Cowan here. We're going to open up 2951. That's the bill you're going to be talking to us about, Representative Cowan. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Open up a work session on House Bill 2951.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe you have before you the Dash 1 amendments that we discussed briefly in our last meeting for 2951, which essentially develop the bill a bit more, add section, add 5 and 6 to specifically talk about the need to expand, when to the extent possible, Oregon Project independence in relationship to services to seniors, and work to develop a proposal to the governor and the legislative assembly that illustrates why Oregon Project independence is an integral part of Oregon's long-term care system, that and that we fund that project appropriately. The folks who have been working on this bill understand that we are running out of time in this committee to work this, and ask that we move it forward to Ways and Means where it can have a full and complete discussion of the importance of stable funding for Oregon Project independence. So with that, Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2951.
Representative Cowan moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2951. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right.
And Madam Chair, I would ask that the committee move House Bill 2951 to Ways and Means without recommendation.
Thank you very much. Representative Cowan moves House Bill 2951 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative
Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Bauer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Excuse?
Chair
Tomei? Aye. Having House Bill 2951 as amended, having received a constitutional majority, is passed and goes to the Committee on Ways and Means. I will close the work session on House Bill 2951. Thank you very much, Representative Powell and Committee. Sir, I see that you have a young gentleman here with you. And
courtesy
is he coming?
Madam Chair.
Oh, okay. Is he coming to... Oh, is this your grandchild?
Madam Chair, I respectfully request courtesies to make welcome my adorable grandson.
Oh, he is adorable. I thought maybe he was here to testify on something. I want to make sure that he had the opportunity to do that. Well, wonderful.
Trevor's probably always willing to talk.
Thank you. Cool. Okay, where are we?
I'm hoping for this.
Okay, I'm going to open up the public hearing on 2571.
It's a work session, Chair.
Okay, work session on House Bill 2571. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would move House Bill 2571 without recommendation to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Representative Gelsier moves House Bill 2646 to the Committee on Elections and Rules without recommendation.
Madam Chair, I think it was House Bill 2571.
I'm sorry. Looking at the wrong bill. Thank you very much, Representative Gelsier. All right. Thank you. Representative Gelsier moves House Bill 2571 to the Committee on Rules and Elections without recommendation. Yes, Representative.
We don't get to make a hard vote on a really tough issue.
You're excused from that today. You may still get a chance. Okay, any discussion?
Yes,
we do.
Have we discussed this? Or
no, no. Okay. We haven't had a chance to vet it, and so that's why we're keeping it alive by sending it to the Committee on Rules. Actually, Monday will be the last day that we can hear any House bills.
Okay.
Because we haven't had a chance to have a hearing on
it. So it's procedural because it doesn't seem like it fits there.
Well, it's the only way to keep it alive.
Okay.
That's where bills go that we want to keep alive, but we don't have a chance to vet them yet.
All right, then.
Yes, you're the newbie, so you.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, Susan, would you call the roll on House Bill 2571?
Representative
Callie?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative
Maller?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Excused?
Chair Tomei?
Aye. House Bill 2571, having gotten the majority will pass on to the Committee on Rules and Elections. And I close
the smoking committee.
The smoking committee. I will close the work session on House Bill 2571. Thank you, committee. Great.
What's your vote on that?
No. Do we have an amendment?
You do
on
not.
That?
You do not.
Okay.
There's only on 29, so you can open it.
Okay. So I'm going to open up the work session and send it on to Ways and Means. Okay, committee, I was corrected. I'm opening up a work session on 3324, and I thought there was an amendment. We had asked for an amendment, but we never got it, so we're going to be sending this on to Ways and Means. This requires the Department of Human Services to establish a task force on problem gambling, et cetera, et cetera. We had talked about that earlier. Yes, Representative
Gossett. Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3324 to the Ways and Means Committee with a do pass recommendation.
I would appreciate that. Thank you. Any discussion? All right. Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative
Gilson?
Aye.
Representative
Gillian?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Wilson? Excused? Aye. House Bill 3324, having gotten the constitutional majority, will pass on to the Committee on Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3324. Last item. All right, so we're doing okay. Public
hearing. Madam Chair, we make sure that our wishes about where that money comes from is passed on to Ways and Means.
Yes.
Okay.
We do, and we have a great member here who is on that committee in Ways and Means, who will make sure that our wishes are conveyed.
Okay, I can go along with that. It's one of the greatest members
her
I've sat next to.
Her wishes. Oh, that's right. It is her wishes. Thank you for that correction. Okay. Did I do that? Did I open up?
You need to open on public hearing.
Open it. I'm not sure if you
need
to.
Is it a public hearing?
Public hearing, Chair.
Okay, I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2646.
Nope, 3330, Chair.
33. Gosh. Get my bills here. Okay, I'm opening up a public hearing on House Bill 3330. Okay, Representative Gelser.
Yes, Madam Chair, in the interest of time, may I just briefly say from here that this, I know there are people here to testify, it establishes a task force on people with disabilities that will look at cross-disability issues from a variety of ages. And Representative Gilliam, did you have a question?
I was looking at somebody else and I apologize.
He's never ready to ask me a question. Okay. It creates a people with disabilities task force, and I think we have several people here to talk about why this is a good bill and why it should pass.
Wonderful. And we're going to ask him to be succinct. We have Nicole Palmatier. Is it Angel Hale?
It is.
Okay. And Kathy White. And then later we'll have Nancy Ozemkowski. Great.
Madam Chair, I'd like an opportunity to ask Representative Gelser a question.
I think that's appropriate.
And who's one of the co-sponsors of this bill?
Madam Chair, one of the best reasons that we should support this bill is that two of your members are sponsoring this bill, Representative Maurer and I, and we make a strong team.
Oh, you do? Great. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Representative Maurer.
Can I go ahead? Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Palmatier. Here on behalf of O4AD, in the interest of time, I will not spell that out for you. You all know who we are. We are very delighted to have suggested House Bill 3330, and thank you to Representative Gelser and Representative Maurer here today who have helped sponsor this bill. In brief, when people with physical disabilities were brought into the Department of Human Services Senior Services section, it really was sort of a we need to do this, we're going to bring them in here, but there's really not been a lot of comprehensive extensive thought about what a robust system of services and supports and programs should look like for people with physical disabilities. It really isn't senior services that have a slight adjustment to it. There are a lot of different needs. Younger people with physical disabilities, independence means a lot of different things to them in relation to what it means to seniors. And rather than try to marshal forth with a budget bill this session to ask for money, we thought, let's stop and take a look at that and get a lot of really good people around the table to be able to have a discussion about that, and then to be able to come back in the 09-11 session with some recommendations for some other different budget priorities in relation to people with physical disabilities within the Department of Human Services. So that's the goal and intent of this bill. It's pretty simple, pretty logical, and we're delighted to have had this suggestion brought forward to O4AD from our disability advisory councils and the people there that make the recommendations on what we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Angel Hale, and I'm at 1820 Madrona Avenue South in Salem. I am here representing the State Independent Living Council today, and we are absolutely in support of HB 3330. One of the things that I really wanted to bring forward in my testimony is that, and I think I'm just reiterating essentially, that the fact is that people with physical disabilities, I happen to be in that population, I'm completely unsighted, really have had sort of a disjointed approach, and I am a proud Oregonian. I think we have set some major milestones around disability-related issues in this state, and I think we can do an even better job if we just look to ourselves. That's the thing that I really think is important about this particular task force, is that it is not just going to be comprised of experts, or so said experts. It's essentially going to be comprised of experts plus people with those disabilities, plus all different geographic and age populations. So one of the quotes that came to mind when I was thinking about my testimony today was that it's an Audrey Hepburn quote that said, if you're looking for a helping hand, look down and you'll see one on the end of your arm. And to me, that exemplifies that we actually have the resources we need in Oregon in order to really get a robust system that is fiscally responsible, which this would be, because it would give us an opportunity to really solidly look at what's happening, what the barriers are, what the gaps are, and how we can make it work better, but also from a humanitarian standpoint, that it really is touching real lives of people, and the people whose lives it does touch are going to be represented on that task force. So the SILC and I are strong components or proponents of this particular task force, and hope that you will consider passing it.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Catherine White, and I am here on behalf of the Oregon DD Coalition. As a Developmental Disabilities Coalition, we've also been involved in working across disability and with the Cross Disability Coalition. For the past 20-some years, I've been involved in advocacy on behalf of people with developmental disabilities, particularly focused on children and families. And one of the things that I want to point out is that the needs and the issues of children with disabilities and their families are much more alike than separate, no matter what disability that child may experience. One of the things that we've become very, very aware of is that there are a population of children with disabilities who experience disability who do not fit into any system. And children with physical disabilities are an example of that population. For example, a child with MS, multiple sclerosis, may not be eligible for any kind of services because they do not experience a cognitive disability associated with the developmental disabilities. So we are here in strong support of this legislation, that it look at the lifespan of people with disabilities who experience disabilities. And we are making a commitment that we will do what we can to participate and support this task force ourselves, because clearly we know this population of families who fall through the cracks.
Thank you so much. Any questions of...
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I have, I guess, just a broader question. This is also built on the testimony we heard from the deaf and hard of hearing community. Have you thought about approaching the governor's office about a governor's task force? And the reason I say that is I have a concern about leaving this within DHS when we really have issues in other agencies. And I don't know, I'm sure that could be incorporated here, but I think we have some system-wide issues outside of DHS around serving people with physical disabilities in general. So I'm just wondering if you've considered that.
Sure. Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, we have thought about that, but in talking to our advisory councils, we wanted to kind of keep it outside with the area agencies on aging. We do have a good relationship with the Department of Human Services, and they've looked at us in drafting this bill. But when we have a task force that's driven by the governor's office, there is a governor's, I believe, the People with Disabilities Advisory Council, but they're limited in scope and what they can look at as it relates to what the priorities are of the governor. And so we wanted to be able to keep this in a broader conversation around the state and not be limited to what those particular policies or what those particular priorities are, but to be able to have that bigger conversation by taking it outside of that. So in working with the department, I think we feel, you know, pretty confident that we'll be able to have that open conversation, and this drives it through there. Originally, we had hoped that, you know, it might be driven by, you know, an organization like O4AD or something like that, but this is how it came out of LC. So that's kind of what we got.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Jelker.
I would just add on to that. I think one of the benefits of having this within the Department of Human Services, one of my concerns, and again, I'm usually concerned about children, but children and people with physical disabilities are very lost within that structure since they're assigned to the senior side of seniors and people with disabilities. And I know earlier this session we had testimony from families around the issues of children living in nursing homes. Okay. That's one of the reasons why we've ended up with that problem, because there's not been a place for those children to move through or to address those physical disability kinds of needs, and the systems are very disjointed. So I think having a task force within the Department of Human Services that raises this issue within the department could help to maybe clarify where the best place within the department is to put attention to people with physical disabilities. It's always been a little bit confusing to me why that's there on the senior side.
Any further questions? Representative,
just to follow, I appreciate that. I guess I think it's a big enough issue that it needs some executive branch forcefulness to it. So I'm actually concerned that just making DHS would not get us where we want to go. So, but I see what you're saying. So, thank you.
Well, since this will probably be going to Ways and Means, Representative Callan.
I haven't really given this a great deal of deep thought, but in looking at the recommendation, I think it's important that we keep the Department of Human Services with a role in it, and I am going to throw out that I think part of the examination of the task force may be that it is not appropriate the way we have seniors and people with disability currently linked. I think that the needs of the senior population, as you well know, are of huge concern to me and something that I think that we need to be giving more serious thought to. And perhaps we are really not serving either population as adequately as we should by trying to link them, the two, in ways that they aren't effectively or that doesn't work as well as it should. So I would just, I am supportive
maybe
of this.
Maybe we should have this discussion in the work session. So.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions of the panel? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nancy Ozmitskowski? Am I anywhere close, Nancy? Ozmitskowski. Thank you so much for coming, Nancy.
Sure. Yeah, where should I be?
Hi.
Do I need to be in the microphone?
You're just fine, Nancy. Okay. You just sit down and we'll...
My name is Nancy Ozmitskowski. I'm the executive director of DUED. That's Disabled United in Direct Empowerment. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for this hearing. We were instrumental in getting HB 3268 passed, which allowed the Department of Human Services not to be able to cut people from services without
they couldn't just reclassify them without a decent hearing. And so we were able to get that bill along with Alan Bates and Peter Buckley and Sal Escobar. I am completely in support of any task force on disabilities that can come, whether it be through the governor's office or through DHS, what is going to happen right now. What I know about being disabled and what I know about being the executive director of a advocacy group for disabled people is people are being left out of the system, and it doesn't integrate with seniors and with physically disabled. There are so many issues that we listen to. Even today we talked about, you know, mental disabilities, developmentally disabled. We need to integrate that into the community so we just don't isolate people into a system of services, but really start empowering everybody that we can. So if we can push this through, that's great, and thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions of this? Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, I assume there's nobody else who's come to testify on this bill? Then I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3330 and open up a work session on House Bill 3330. Representative Bauer.
Yes, Madam Chair. I will move that House Bill 3330 be moved to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Maurer moves House Bill 3330 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes,
Madam Chair. In the moment since our last discussion, I've had the opportunity to reflect, and I think that I better understand the point that Representative Kotek was making, and now I'm thinking about all of these system-wide issues related to people with physical disabilities, and I actually agree. And whether this is the vehicle or there's another way to make that happen, I hope that maybe that conversation will come up in the Ways and Means. I think she makes a very good point.
This happens to me all the time. She makes no sense here. And then I get home, and it's brilliant.
Always add something to these meetings, Representative Gill.
That's what I'm here for.
Any other discussion? Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative
Gelser? Aye.
Representative Dillon?
Aye.
Representative
Kotek?
Aye.
Representative
Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Excused?
Chair
Aye. House Bill 3330, make sure I'm on the right one, having received the constitutional majority, is passed to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. I close the public hearing on House Bill 3330. Colleagues, thank you so much for staying. We got a lot done today. I'm going to announce a possible work session on House 3016, which we heard earlier today regarding the damaged properties. We're hoping we won't need it. That group will be getting back to me by 3 o'clock today, and we will let you know as soon as we have that information whether or not it will be necessary to have another meeting. And it would be a 9 o'clock on Monday if we do have a meeting. Ooh, a little extra sleep in on Monday. Representative Gillen, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do. I wanted to give a 10-second update on 2491 and just ask the chair's sort of advice or position on the possibility of another hearing. And it's just simply this. I have been trying. This is the bill specifically the issue around transparency, and the Mary's Woods group is the group that brought it forward, just to refresh your memory.
Right.
And I've been trying to work with stakeholders, and we have a set of amendments. We have some other alternatives. DHS has been very responsive. We've rejuvenated that, I can't think of the name of it right now, the council that existed but was kind of... So I'm very positive we'll have some solutions, but I'm holding for the outside possibility we might need a hearing, and so I wanted to bring that to your attention.
Thank you so much. I would need approval of the speaker at this point to do that, so we will see what we can do, but thank you for bringing that up.
You bet.
Yes, Representative Maurer.
Can you just clarify this, not by bill, but the schedule? Today is the last day to hear.
Monday is actually the absolute last day to do anything on House bills.
To work session House bills.
Correct.
Okay, with the exception of Ways and Means, obviously, revenue, rules, those are the three.
Yes,
that's okay. And then so starting Wednesday, it's Senate bills.
Senate bills, correct.
Very good.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can I inquire about your intentions around That's the one we heard on them. And just to note, I'm not happy the way it's written, so I wouldn't support it the way it's done, but I didn't know if you had...
I have no intentions to note
okay.
that.
Okay, thank you, because I won't continue conversations with anyone. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, concerns? Again, thank you all for staying. I really appreciate it. And I will see you at least on Monday. I'm co-seeing the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness. Thank you all very much.